I would argue, and many would agree, that Lewis marshals his finest prose to conjure up the landscape of Venus. We learn that much of Venus is covered by ocean, and skimming the surface of that pristine water are floating islands that move and fluctuate and dance with the waves. And believe me, if you read Paralandra, you will never forget those floating islands. It's the most beautiful image you can imagine as they float gracefully over the waves. Well, during the novel, Ransom rides and sleeps on those floating islands, and their gentle undulations fill him with a pleasure he has never known. A pleasure neither sexual nor asexual, but transsexual. In other words, they are pleasures that our earthly bodies are too weak to enjoy. I remind you of something I've said before. Our emotions are not too strong for heaven, but they are too weak. And so here, let's put it this way. The excessive pleasure of Venus, its exuberance and prodigality overwhelms Ransom's senses. It's a sensory overload. But you know what the wonderful thing is? All of that sensual pleasure comes to Ransom without any guilt. This is an Edenic pre-fallen world, and so the sensual pleasures come to us without any guilt. Let me give you some examples of that pleasure. Ransom sucks the juice out of a gourd, and the intensity of the taste satisfies both hunger and thirst. He bursts the pod of a bubble tree and is showered by an ice-cold stream that refreshes his body, fills his nostrils with a sharp, shrill, exquisite scent, and so cleanses his eyes as to make the colors around him seem richer. And again, all of this comes free from guilt. Now, at first, Ransom desires to take in a second time the sweetness of the gourd and the tree. He wants to do it again, if you will. But both times he stops himself, not out of guilt, but out of a refusal to spoil the joy and freshness of the pleasure by seeking what Lewis calls an unnecessary encore. In other words, he won't do it again and again and again. For Lewis, that is part of the fallen human race, our desire to hold on to a pleasure and hoard it and own it and do it again and again and again. You see, as we saw in Lecture 2 about joy, joy ceases to be joy when it is sought as an end in itself. If he tried to hold on to the pleasure of the gourd, it would cease to be a pleasure. Indeed, the avaricious, lustful desire to own a pleasure, to cling to it even after it has gone sour, is at the core of Satan's evil. We learn that the bent Oyarsa, the evil Oyarsa of earth, we learn that he is holding on to the earth even though it's gone sour. And you know what? Even though he knows it's gone sour, yet he still clings to it. He is avaricious, and he has ceased to enjoy it, and yet he clings. Well, the queen of Paralandra, our Eve character, is innocently free of this desire, the desire for the encore. She receives with joy whatever Mal-El-Dil gives her. She accepts it with thankfulness. Why? Because Eve, or the queen, is above the need for ownership. That is not to say it is a communist, you know, country. The idea is not that private property is bad, but she is above private property. She doesn't need it. It's sort of like a monastery, where a monastery is communism, but it's based on a higher sort of spiritual code. Let's talk a little bit more about the queen. The queen of Paralandra lives in direct communion with Mal-El-Dil. Now, part of that is because of her innocent state. But there's another reason. The other reason is because, Lewis tells us, ever since Mal-El-Dil's son took human form on Falkandra, no intermediaries are needed between human and divine. In other words, ever since Christ took on form, We don't need any intermediaries. The whole universe has changed because of the incarnation. Or as Lewis explains it, within the eschatological framework of his novel, the incarnation of Christ marks a turning point in the universe.